Hey friends, how are you?
Hello, it's Mindy joining on the go today.
Hey, no problem, Mindy. Welcome. Thanks for coming. Chris, good to see you. Sorry, I'm a little delayed. Was having some Zoom troubles. Was not.
No problem, man.
Let's see here. I see artichokes on your hat there. What's going on with that?
Those are the that's the Hillsboro hops. And I love baseball. I love IPAs, so it works out great.
So that's a baseball team?
It's a minor league team for the D-backs. So pretty cool.
Oh, I did not know that. Very cool.
Yeah, the
Awesome.
Hillsboro hops.
Awesome.
Love it.
All righty. Very cool. Well, thanks for coming, everybody. We're going to do a little bit of orientation here on another tool that I like to use for people, leaders, and for some of you, this is going to apply very strongly. For others, you're going to feel maybe not quite now. That's okay. Part of what I like to do is solution awareness, right? So sometimes it's just knowing a thing exists out there because one day when you encounter the problem, you'll be like, oh yeah, there was that thing. So this is found in module 4, video. Well, let me see where it is. Hang on a minute. Well, instead of wasting time on that, if you just look up RACI, RACI, it's called a RACI chart. And you may have even seen this before. Some of you may have used it before. I'm going to teach you how it gets misused, how to use it the right way, and help you understand that. So first thing to know is I remember one of the first times I used this is, I'm hired by companies to come in and really help the human side of the business function well. So what'll happen is I'll come into a business, we'll be talking to people, and there'll be all kinds of conflict between different players on the team. And so part of what I'll be doing in trying to help deal with that conflict is I might bring the Enneagram as a tool to help them develop some self-understanding. I might teach them how to have hard conversations. There's the kind of the human stuff that I'll be working on. What I also started to discover over time is that sometimes just clarifying a structure or a set of accountabilities or forming new agreements can actually clear up most of the problems. So sometimes it has nothing to do with complex personality issues or underlying deep-seated resentments or clearing the emotional system. Sometimes it's just about forming clear agreements and establishing clarity around power and authority. And when that happens, I've found that it clears up a lot of problems. So you may not, I'm not saying that this solves every problem, but I am saying that it's sometimes the right solution. And you can tell based on the kinds of conversations you're having. So I remember being in one company, there was the head of marketing, there was the head of operations, and they just could not see eye to eye. And they kept telling the other person has a different philosophy, and that's not how I operate, and they want to do this, and I don't agree with that. And the marketing team, they're always, promoting things that we can't deliver on. And the marketing team's going, these guys don't deliver anything new or fresh or interesting. So how are we supposed to market something fresh and cool and awesome? And so there's this conflict, this tension. Or there was another arm of a company that had a development arm. They were doing real estate development. And then they also had a construction arm. And so real estate development is we go out, we find the land, we estimate it, we go out and we get debt and equity, and we put it on it. And then we hand it to the construction team and they're supposed to build it for that price. And of course, the construction team is like, hold on a minute. There's no lumber is this per square foot. How did you come up with that number? There's no way that's going to work. That's going to kill the deal. You've already gone too far down the road. Now we got to go back on our equity and debt. And so there's all this frustration. That guy doesn't know what he's talking about. This person isn't really good at their job, et cetera. So that's what happens. So when there's a kind of a people are having to work together on the same thing, and there need to be clear handoffs and agreements and all those things that need to kind of be more seamless. This is a tool I like to use. It's called a RACI chart. And I'm going to share my screen and show you what a RACI chart is, why it's structured the way it is, how you can use it so that it can be potentially really effective for you. So let me share the old screen. And we'll go with this one to this one will work fine. Okay, I've got two versions, but this is the development process. So this is a real estate development company, although I wonder if it might be more useful to share the marketing and ops one. I think it's a little more relevant to maybe some of you. So here's what a RACI chart is. RACI stands for responsible is the R, A is approved, consulted is the C, and I is inform. So what you're doing is you're defining a set of agreements of power. And you're saying, this is the person who has the right to approve something. This is the person who has the right to be responsible. This is the person who's going to be consulted. And here's who's going to be informed. So how is responsible and approval distinct? Well, the person who's responsible is responsible for initiating the action or overseeing the process. And then the approver has the final approver over the action. Now, we may think that those would always be the same person, and often they are the same person, but not always. An example of that might be, I'm a CEO, I have an executive assistant, they are working on my travel arrangements. Now, when he sends me the stuff that I'm supposed to be traveling on, I'm the one who decides where I'm going and when, not him. He's going to give me information, but he's responsible for going out and finding the information. So he'd get an R and I'd get an A. If that were a point of confusion, we would create a RACI chart. So that's how the distinction between responsible and approved. The key here is there is always and only one person on a given line that's going to be responsible. You cannot have multiple R's. It will mess everything up. So one person's got to say, I'm going to take the ball and run with it. You can have multiple approvers. I recommend you keep those to a bare minimum because that's how you bottleneck decisions. So there are certain places where multiple people all get an A. But you want to be careful where those are. Then there's the consulted. Consulted means you, if I have a C, a consult, that means you have to consult me before you make any decision. So I get to give input because what you're about to do is going to have a material consequence for something I'm accountable for. And so you owe me that consult. However, if I don't like what you're doing, and if I tell you I disagree and I don't think that's right and I don't want that and I recommend this, not that, that's a consult. The person with the A still has the right to say, thanks for your input. I'm going this way anyway. You've been consulted. I've heard you, but I'm going this way. That is the consult. So whether they like it or not, they know that they have a C and they go, well, it's not my authority. I've got to be able to allow that to unfold. Then the last is informed. And informed is after a decision has been made, this person needs to be informed. They don't need to be consulted, but they do need the information. So you might look at them and go, well, you know, I needed to know that you guys went and did that because that means that I've got to start this process over here. Doesn't matter what decision you make, I have to start a process. So maybe I'm an accountant or an attorney or whatever. I just need to know that this thing happened. And then anywhere there's a blank, they don't need to be involved at all at that stage of a process. So that's how you define the behaviors and actions and agreements. And then what you do is you create a list of decision points or processes in a given area. So in this case, we're looking at a marketing process. So there's one area called brand, and there's different aspects of building a brand that you need to come to terms with. You need a position and an attitude and articulation. You need brand planks. What are the values of this brand? And you need naming and identity, perhaps. Then you have company-wide campaigns in this company. They were doing, you know, where are we going to market ourselves? And so you're looking at what's the investment thesis? What's the market research? And this is a property management company. So we've got a creative brief. We've got budget and timing. We've got creative concepts. We've got copy and scripts. We've got final production, et cetera. And then you've got digital and social media. You've got all these elements of social media. You've got crisis management. You might need some of their crises that happen on a property. Someone gets injured or worse. How are you going to deal with that? And who's going to be on first for when that happens? So that work is done by the team. They go, what are all those elements? Now, the key here is you do not have to be exhaustive. The goal is not to create and document every single thing that happens in any part of a business. The goal is to identify the areas where there's tension, where things aren't going well, where people don't connect to each other. And you're listing those things out if you need to. So the detailed level is, yeah, this gives you anxiety, I get it. The detail, this is a very sophisticated, intricate property management organization at a very high level. You might have a RACI chart that only has four lines, honestly. And that may clear up whatever challenges and tensions you're facing with people. And you're noticing, like, I keep noticing this tension and we keep moving forward without having the conversation we need to have before. when you're noticing those kinds of things, or when someone comes to you and they're like, I'm frustrated, this person doesn't do this, I need them to do this, they're not doing it. That's when you go, oh, okay, that's like a category. That's one of the line items that we need to form agreements around how we're going to behave together and who has what authority and who has what responsibility. So, so hopefully that's helping you get access to how to think about this. Then what you do is you go across the top here, and all you're looking at are roles. You are not putting the names of the individuals in here. You're deliberately putting the name of the role. This is an impersonal document. Now, why do I do that? The reason I do that is because you're now playing with power. When you start messing with where R's and A's and C's go, you are affecting someone's agency and power in the team. And if they feel they are owed more power than they have earned or that their role requires, they might get hurt. They might get, you know, this could be troubling. And so we depersonalize it on purpose. And we talk about it in that way. We say, we're just talking about whoever the VP of marketing is. The VP of marketing in this marketing process needs to be responsible and have final authority to approve things. And they're going to need to consult with other people along the way. And so you can see that for the VP of marketing, they got the lion's share of the A's and the R's. And that was appropriate, right? Now you get down here to a local property. Suddenly, the VP of marketing is no longer the queen bee. It's now the director of ops. And why is that? Well, because the director of marketing is overseeing marketing for 55 properties, and the director of operations is punched in on 3 properties. So they know what's going on week in and week out way better than the VP. So they need to be the ones that are going, okay, I think this is the campaign. I think this is the big idea. I'm going to check in with the VP of marketing because the VP of marketing gets a consult. And I'm going to ask, hey, is this consistent and coherent with the brand as you are the champion of the brand? And the VP can say, I think you might want to tweak that a little bit. And then they go back to the operator. And the operator still ultimately gets the right to do what they want to do. Okay, so that's how you can see how things shift and move and migrate depending on whatever it is you're dealing with. So you have all of these different roles that are going to touch any one of these points. And again, please don't be overwhelmed. This is a very big, complex system that I was working with. So it's a much longer and more involved process to build this out. For you, it might be really simple. You may not even need a RACI chart, but all I'm trying to do is show you a particular tool that I've used to great effect that's very simple. Now, in a moment, I'm going to talk about how to introduce this, how to actually execute it, and how to make use of it after the fact, because it's very easy to throw this out, do it, and then nobody pays attention to it, and we all ignore it. So what I want to do is just, I'm going to pause, though, before I talk about the how. And I want to just ask, what questions are coming up for you as you're looking at this?
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. So it's interesting because I'm looking at this and I'm thinking about my own company and I'm the CEO. And I, of course, this is marketing, but it's just a thought that's coming through my mind is, wow, that's so great. The CEO doesn't have much to do here.
Yeah.
Whereas in my business, I feel like I'm the R for freaking everything.
You are. Currently, you are. And you don't have to be.
Yeah.
And this is where we come back to, I think, a little piece you may have missed last week, which was delegation. Yeah. So this is also a tool to help you feel more comfortable delegating because you start to form clear agreements about who's going to do what, when, how, and where, and why.
Yeah.
So, you know, last week we talked about a little a chart and a graph that effectively shows what is really important and what is very difficult to do. And then you map across 4 quadrants, and quadrant 1 is the most difficult and the most important. And what we try to do is say, if you're the leader, and those are of all the tasks you have that you can map all the various tasks. You start with a list of all the tasks that you know are happening and need to get done. And then you map them on this little chart. And anything that's in quadrant 1, that's yours. Anything outside of quadrant 1, you try to find ways to hand those off. Mm. And the reason is because a 90% is still an A. And so the certain things that you know have to be done at that 100%, that's that most important, most difficult, that's the A. 100%, you're probably the one who has to do it. anything that doesn't have to be done at 100% or isn't that hard to do and still has to be done at 100%, you can start handing those things off. And as you hand them off, if you're noticing there are things still falling through the cracks and things aren't getting done, then you start to introduce, or if you're noticing tensions, or if you're frustrated, if you're like, what is going on? Why are they doing this that way? I don't like this. Then that's time for a RACI chart. And there's a blank one of these, a template that you can just download in the training module 4. You can see it. There's also more training on this so that you get a little deeper dive. If you forget any of this, you want to know more, you can always come back and watch this video too. So there's a place where you can go to start to build this if you needed to. So I'm just going to pause there. So does that make sense, Bridget, how that might be relevant for you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. I think, and I'll go back and watch last week, but I think I'm a good delegator, but then looking at this, I also feel responsible for every action that I start. So it's a good.
And how many team members do you have?
There's 4 of us full time. And then probably part-time, key players part-time, 3. So there's 7 of us there. Yeah.
Okay. So I would say with those 7, which is great, the thing you would do, you would start with is a little exercise where you simply list out what are all the things that kind of occupy your mind. This is your brain dump where you're just listing them all out. Here are all the things that I feel responsible for that I have to get done and do. And go ahead and list those out. Then map them on the quadrants. So one line is how hard something is to do. The other line is how important something is. And usually it should be the upper right corner is quadrant 1. Anything that lives there, you're going to do. You're going to get an R. You're going to get an A. You're going to get both of those. Then anything that lives anywhere else, you're going to experiment with. You're going to try giving somebody else an R and an A possibly. You might need the A for a little while, but they get the R. So the way, what that does is that's a way to map out a kind of a developmental path. Like for now, I still am going to approve it because you're still learning it, but you're responsible now for initiating it, planning it, executing it. And at the end of the day, though, you're still going to come and have me approve it. Then as they evolve, you're going to go, you know what? Now all I need is a C. I just need you to check in with me to make sure that there's no disaster that's happening. You're still going to have the final say. Now you're going to have the final say. Prior, you didn't. Now you do. And then the last step is, second to last step is, now I need an I as the CEO. So I just need you to tell me that something got done. It's important for me and my business that I know that happened. So you need to inform me. And then the last step is, there may be areas where it's like, I don't even need to know. Just go do it. So I get a blank on that line item, and that R and that A and that C live somewhere else. And I, as the CEO, don't even have to think about it anymore. It's just getting handled unless there's some terrible thing that's happened. It's going to be, you know, not my problem.
Yeah. All right. That's great. And then at one access of this quadrant is hard, the difficulty. And then what's the other access?
Important.
Important.
Okay. So for example, you know, fundraising is both very important and very difficult. It's going to live in quadrant 1. That's why CEOs get that fun job, right?
Currently in a raise, so I'm triggered.
Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yes. But it lives there for a reason, right? Whereas like bookkeeping is very important, but actually not very hard, right? So that should be delegated to somebody. And I'm just giving like, you know, round numbers. There are lots of other things. Social media, I would say, has moderate importance unless it's the core of your business. Then it might be very important. Or maybe you're in an industry where social media doesn't matter at all. It's got zero importance and it's not that hard. Social media isn't that hard. You can find a few people to do it. You can delegate it. And you don't have to think about it anymore. So those are examples of like, how hard is something? How important is it? Map the quadrants. Then if you need to, build a RACI. And sometimes that RACI is actually helpful for you more than even them. Like you might just need it to feel that sense of like, oh, okay, I now know how important this is. I now know where it needs to live. I know where I'd give the R and the A, and I know how long I'm going to try that for. So I'm going to keep the A for a little while, and then eventually I'm going to get the C, and then eventually I'm going to get the I, and then maybe one day I might just get a Z, nothing, right? So when the day comes that you're a chairman and you hire a CEO, that fundraising comes off your plate, right? Yeah. So that's how that works. One day, soon, maybe next week.
Yeah, thank you. That's very helpful.
How would you go, because I'm looking at this, and I think this can be very helpful because this is one of those issues that we've got. And I've got multiple departments that I'm overseeing. So I've got my IT folks, my marketing, my training and development, marketing. I've got sales, unfortunately, is coming back to me. And then I've got my CEO where, and it's funny because I was talking to a COO from another bank recently, and he's got the same problem that I have where the CEO goes, oh, we can go ahead and do this and we'll stand it up in a week. And we look at him and go, the hell are you talking about? It's going to be like 3 months. And they're telling everybody it's ready to go. And it's, we both had a good chuckle about that. and it's the joy of being the CEO that you get to tell everybody with the timeline.
Yes.
So how do you break this? And I can only assume you just, it's just a bigger list, but breaking it down amongst different departments. And
So the first thing you want to identify is so I'm showing you a different RACI that's a different process and different departments and all that. So you can see how it functions a little differently. So the first thing you need to identify is what are the tension points that you need to create agreement across functions? So in this case, this is the real estate development process. They're building a high-rise skyscraper in downtown Austin. How do they do it? What process do they go through? And who's going to be involved? Well, that's a lot of departments that are going to get involved in that, right? That's a big, intricate process. So you've got your land acquisitions people. You've got your development manager. You've got your VP of development, your executive VP of development. Now you're in construction, VP of construction. Those are two departments, two different departments all right there. Then you've got your VP of capital markets. That's another department, a finance department. Then you've got director of asset management, another department still. Then you got a CEO who's over it all. Then you've got the investment committee, which are all the people that come together on this thing and get together and have a go, no go meeting to decide whether or not they're going to go. Then you got a chief operating officer who's making sure that other things are happening in the business. And so the chief operating officer just needs to be informed of a bunch of stuff, occasionally consult and one approve, right? Whether they're going to use third-party management or not. He's going to be the guy who figures that out. But all the way along here, you can see how you've got stages also. So you've got site acquisition and entitlement is just mostly the VP of development and the land guys going out and trying to figure out where they want to build something. Yes, the construction people need to weigh in because if they're like, oh yeah, we should build there, it's going to be great. Construction will know, no, you got to have concrete foundations. You can't do that. In fact, you have to have basements and crawl space and that's going to add this much cost. And like, oh, we didn't know that, right? So that's why you'd have them. Then you've got project concept and you've got all these other things that go on and it's still largely in the development land. Then you've got design. Now it starts going increasingly to construction. Construction needs a lot more control and authority over the design factor that's happening because every design decision has a construction implication and so on and so forth, right? And then along the way, you've got effectively investment committee meetings, right? So down here, after this stage of the initial thing, you've got initial triage investment committee. We all get together and we hold hands and we say, yes or no, do we want to spend money to go to the next stage? So in this case, to go from site acquisition entitlement project concept, there's a whole lot of money that has to be deployed in order to go to the next phase. So we all get together and we say, there's a bunch of money. Do we want to spend that money? Do we think there's a purpose here? Yep. Okay. Then we go through all of this. And then we have another big moment where a whole lot of money is going to outlay and we need to have a committee meeting. We've done all of our due diligence. And then we have the big meeting. And then finally, we go through this whole thing and we have another meeting. And so that's their process. And here are all the people that are members of the investment committee. So that's how that chart works. So you can just start to see how that's more like we're all working together on a flow that has a beginning, middle, and an end. And we all need to figure out how we're going to work together in that beginning, middle, and end. That may be different from what you're dealing with, which is like, we don't really have a clear beginning, middle, and end. We have what's called an infinite game. There's always ongoing. Everything's always happening. And what I notice is there are tension points along that figure eight journey. as we're always coming back around to doing the same things over and over again, I'm noticing that we keep getting stuck right here. Well, what is that? Oh, it looks like our IT and our marketing really need to shake hands better. And they're not getting along and they're not figuring it out. That means I need to facilitate a conversation around a RACI chart to make sure that the IT understands they can't make that decision without marketing's input or vice versa. And so it's not so much a tool you're going to use to be like, well, I just need to manage five discrete departments. And so I'm going to put them all under one thing. That won't help anybody. That'll just, you know, it might be useful for you, but everybody else will be like, well, I don't know why I'm in this meeting because I don't even touch that other department ever. You know, they're just doing their thing. We're doing our thing. We don't need to even be informed of what each other is doing, right? Then it's a bunch of blank spaces. So I think that's the other thing you want to be asking is, I've got multiple departments. They're all trying to interact. How would I go about, where do I need to even have these conversations? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you want to dig deeper on it?
You actually used one of those key phrases, the infinite game, where it's, we don't have a start and finish. You know, there's no closure. It's continual.
That's right.
To an extent, we do have projects that will launch, whether it's a new investor or new software or whatever. It's just something I have struggled with immensely. And
yes,
due to the complexity of it, and then we have, unfortunately, our retail division and our division is an us and them. And we fight for resources, and the two CEOs hate each other.
So, I think that's more than a racy problem. Yeah, I get it.
There's all kinds of stuff going on. I'll try to be the Switzerland and get along with everybody and bridge the gap between the two companies. And to an extent, I've been successful, but I'm trying to. And my IT folks straddle both sides. So I've got IT folks on my side. I've got IT folks on their side. And we're all working within the same system.
Right.
I think something like this could be helpful, just if anything, just for my own peace of mind.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would take a crack at it. I would take the draft and I would just sort of do that little exercise of populating. What are those elements? Are there stages? Are there things that I just want us to, that I want to identify? And then populate all the people across the top. And if you map it out and you're realizing, like, actually, there are some really key tension areas that need to be discussed and addressed and understood, then you've got a great fodder for a RACI chart. And if you get to the end of it and you're like, there's a whole lot of, like, this section, there's a whole lot of A's and R's and C's in for one group, and they don't interact with any other departments or anything. And then this next section, there's a whole lot of A's and, you know, R's, and they don't interact with them, and they don't need to. Then what you have is a useful RACI chart for that department, but you don't necessarily have interdepartmental RACI, right? So there's two different things I'm doing. So in Bridget's case, she doesn't need an interdepartmental RACI because she's the company. It's a single cell organism. So it's very simple to do a RACI. In your case, you've got multiple departments with different reporting lines and power structures. So you might need a slightly different thing. And there is value in building a RACI just for each department. So for example, this is the development process RACI chart, but I also have a RACI chart just for construction. So within construction, you've got a whole lot of other details that do not show up in the development process that they need to find agreement around, like the construction manager and the VP of construction and the EVP of construction all need to get along and figure out who's responsible and accountable for what. And this sometimes helps with that.
Shane, would it make sense to start, as you're developing one of these RACI charts, to perhaps do it initially for yourself at that departmental level? And then once you feel like which departments are responsible, approving, et cetera, then open it up and get deeper down into it as to which role within there before you begin to share it with other people as you're developing it?
Yes. So now you're getting into the next great question, which is the how. How do you actually do this? You know, so the first thing you do as the leader is you take a crack at how you think it should look, how you want it to look. And you're going to bake it to about 80%. And you're going to tell people that. You're going to say, hey, I'm introducing a new process to try to help create clarity. This is 80% baked. There are certain things in here that are in there for a reason. And I'm going to try to help you all understand that. if you see something that doesn't work or you think is going to cause really big problems, you need to raise your hand and let me know so that we can make the adjustments. And so someone will go, you know what? I don't need an A there. I'm fine with that. Or, you know, I need an A because that here's what's going to happen. And what you're looking for is your level of authority must always match your level of responsibility or accountability. What I'm accountable for, I must also have the power or the authority to execute on. Anytime you feel accountable for something and you don't have the authority to deal with it, your stress will always increase in a team. So that's what you're searching for, that matching those two things. Sometimes someone will get authority for something they're not accountable for. They'll have no stress, but somebody else somewhere will, because somebody's accountable. Right. So that's why it's so critical. When you get an A, you want to make sure when you're getting an A and you have the authority to approve, are you also the one held accountable for the outcome? Because if you are, then you should have the A. But if you're not held accountable for that outcome, it's probably true somebody else needs that A. Now, I understand like the CEO, of course, at the end of the day, always gets the A across everything. But in this case, we're talking about departmental authority or team authority, things like that. So that's the first thing I would say is the way you introduce it is you would teach them just, that's my dog going crazy. You would teach them the method. Here's what it is. Here's how it works. Here's why we're doing it. We're forming agreements to make our lives easier. Here's what it looks like. Then what you do is you will say to them, we're going to try this out for 90 days. I want us to live with this for 90 days. And over those 90 days, we're going to experiment with it. We're going to see what works, what doesn't work, where somebody keeps falling down on the job. And we're not going to be holding each other accountable. We're going to be learning together for 90 days. At the end of 90 days, we're going to have a meeting. It's already on the calendar. Make sure you schedule that meeting 90 days from that point. RACI review meeting. At the end of 90 days, we're going to get together and we're going to review this and ask, how's it working? Now, some of you may only need a month to do that. Some of you might need 6 months or a year to do that. It depends on your life cycle of that infinity loop or the life cycle of the beginning, middle, and end of a given project. So that's just a thing for you to be aware of is like, well, how long do I think it would take for us to hit every one of these steps in a process? And I'd like to at least hit one at once so that we know what it felt like going through. And so that's how long. So I'm saying 90 days is like a rough amount. The end of 90 days, you get back together, you say, how did it go? And they go, you know, I think this wasn't really necessary and I don't really get that. And I think that really worked. That's fine with me. We're good to go, right? So everybody does all of that. So at that point, you say, great, we got the RACI figured out. Now we're going to secure it in stone for a year. We're not going to debate it anymore. We're going to go live with it for a year or two or however, you know, you need to get a couple of cycles. And what you're going to say is from now on, we are held accountable to this RACI chart. So if you fall down on it, we'll ask you to fix it. Your job is to be accountable to this agreement. This document is an agreement for how we're going to behave with each other. So that's how you introduce a RACI chart in a smart way. That's how you make sure that you don't just put it in a drawer and everybody forgets about it. You make sure you have that meeting that follows up. You make sure that people are allowed to make mistakes in the early days, because if you've played with power, you're messing with habits, you're messing with all kinds of things. And so people might have old bad habits and they need to get trained out of them. But then you give them that kind of firm statement where you're saying, this is the new Bible. This is our doctrine. We're going to operate according to this. And then you hold people accountable to it. Okay. Christine, maybe Roland, do you?
Can probably just say it versus you trying to read it. As I'm looking in this roles and responsibilities and everything, someone like myself who has a smaller team, and there's a lot of this crossover between roles and responsibilities, their true job description, what they were officially hired for. Is it okay to, I know it's okay, but is like how much we have to kind of stay in our lane? So if someone is assigned as an approval, does that have to match with their official titles and roles and responsibilities? Or can we use their skill sets to make these assignments? Does that make sense?
Great question. Okay.
That's what I'm trying to explain. Okay.
Yeah, great question. Thank you for that. I'm going to share my screen. So part of what you're talking about, first of all, what I think needs to happen is the role, not necessarily a job description, the role is what needs to be populated across the top. So a person can occupy multiple roles, right? So there is a really interesting piece of software that you can use for free. And I'm going to share my screen here. And some people have loved this and other people don't like it. And it's fine if you don't like it. It's free and you can try it. This is an actual organization that I worked with to help them redefine their roles. Now, let me stop the share for a minute and make sure we're clear on something. There is a big difference between job descriptions and roles. Job descriptions are something that describes what a person does. A role is something that describes how work happens. Roles are how you organize work happening in a system. Job descriptions are how you hire and staff people. Job descriptions are for people. Roles are for the work that needs to get done. So a person should only ever occupy one job description. Usually that's how it works. But a job description could be a basket of 25 roles. So a role is much simpler than a job description. It has a very simple title. It has a very simple description. And it has very clear accountabilities and not very many of them. And so let me see if I can find this document too. I think this is it. Yes. So I'm going to show you the Word version of what I'm talking about. And then I'm going to show you how you could apply it to this piece of software that's quite helpful and interesting, depending on the complexity of your team and your system and all that. Let me find my document. Where did I? There it is. Okay, great. So this document is found in your trainings. We're in kind of module 4 right now. It's all structure and how to create structures that work for you. So here is how I had a job. I was a chief leadership officer. That job was comprised of a whole bunch of roles. So here were my roles. First of all, these are all the roles agreed to that the chief leadership officer will play in the company. I'm reporting to the CEO. Number one, I'm the vision and values steward. That is a role. It's not a personal thing. It's just something that I picked out of the basket and put in my basket and said, I'll take care of that. The purpose, to articulate and initiate vision and values for the company. Accountabilities, I need to interview stakeholders. I need to ask people to answer the question, why is this our business? I'm also an executive coach. That's another role. Now you'll notice that what's great about roles is they're like Legos. So you could say, hey, Shane, you're doing great as a vision value steward. Keep that up. You're a terrible executive coach. We're going to hire somebody else, right? And then we go, oh, okay, that role is now gone from me. I'm a human development architect. So I was figuring out, how do we do human development, which was part of the mission of the organization in this organization? I'm also a human development trainer. Well, those two things don't have to be the same. So I could do the architecture and say, here are all the things that I care about that I think people need to do and learn. And then I'm going to hire trainers to go out and do how to have hard conversations, how to align with your purpose, how to unlock potential and overcome limits, learning how to coach, introduction to the Enneagram. I could hire 7 experts to do that, right? So we go on. And on, I'm a brand architect. So now I'm in marketing. Like, what the heck? Why was I in marketing? I'm the chief leadership officer. What am I doing in marketing? Well, I have a background in marketing and nobody else in the company knew as much as I did. So they're like, hey, will you take that Lego and put it in there? Yes, right? So that's how this can work. Now, you can do it like this, just a simple Word document. Use this format, simple purpose, create a cool name, a couple of key accountabilities. Don't overthink it. Don't overwrite it. Really simple. And those can be interchangeable. You can also, any questions about this, just structurally, before I go to the next thing? Makes sense, kind of how you could conceive brilliant, of. Yes. What's that?
So this is brilliant, thank you, yes.
Yeah, so then what you can do if you want is you can take a collection of roles that they're totally agnostic when you create roles. They're not about people. They are about what does the organization need to function at its best. It needs roles with a specific purpose and clear accountabilities. Once I know what those roles are, then I can match those roles to a person who can actually occupy and take on those roles. And so why this is so helpful is sometimes we build relationships with our workers and our coworkers that we're so close to that we go, well, we've got to find a way for them to fit. Maybe the very first step in designing a structure of your organization is to imagine you don't have a staff. Imagine you fired everybody and you have to build this thing agnostically cold and start there. Then you can start saying, well, that role could fit over here with this person, and this one can go here. And actually, this person can do all of these, and we need to hire somebody to do that. We don't have anybody who does this. Why don't we have somebody who does this? And then you can figure out, do we need to hire that, right? So any role could be 1 hour a month, or it could be 30 hours a month. Roles could be different. Now, if you have a role that's too big, that's 30 hours a month, or 30 hours a week, it's really a job description. So you want to make sure you're chunking them down enough that they're actually useful, but you don't want them chunked so far down that they're like, why did I spend time creating that distinction? Okay, so with that, I'm going to jump over here and show you the software. This is called GlassFrog. GlassFrog, started by a company called Holacracy, Holacracy One. Holacracy uses a totally different system for organizational governance. They do not have hierarchies. No, there is no bosses. There's no one above anybody else. And it's a very intricate, very complex system to learn. And it would be like throwing out your entire operating system and rebuilding and learning from new. I don't recommend that. You can, if you want, you can reach out to them. They have consultants who will come in and teach you how to run a holacratic organization. I like the theory. I think it's a whole lot of work to figure out. And I've been trained in it, so I know how it works. All that to say, there's all kinds of things that go on in this software that you're never going to use. I use it to help people articulate their roles. So for example, if you look and then they visualize it for you. So in this organization, you have here JTP Capital. They're a placement agent for raising large amounts of capital for companies. Within JTP Capital, you have leadership. That's a circle. That's an area. That's like a category. Within that category, you have a role. That role is firm visionary. Then you have the firm storyteller. Then you have the firm storytelling executor, right? So they created different kinds of terms and roles. So the firm visionary is the CEO. The firm storyteller is taking that big vision, that simple vision, and articulating that into a storytelling device for people to care about and like this firm. Then the firm storytelling executor is the one who's actually running the campaigns. So you could also call this the marketing guy, right? But instead of saying marketing, you're looking at a very specific function within marketing and asking, a VP of marketing may not be a good storyteller, but they might be amazing at understanding the intricacies of social media. So you might want to remove that storytelling function and make it live somewhere else. It's still a marketing thing, but it lives somewhere else. So within each of these, you then see, let me go back here. We clicked on this and we go, okay, I'm in firm visionary. What's the purpose? To imagine our future and set the destination and plot the course. What are the accountabilities? Set direction for current lines of business. Set direction for new lines of business. Mentor and coach the senior team. So guess who occupies that? Mitch Sikora, he's the CEO of that company, right? So then you can punch out and you can come all the way out here. And you can say, okay, we've got this other whole thing. We've got firm operations. And within that, we have finance manager, payroll, benefits, bookkeeper, website wizard, talent magnet captain, person responsible for trying to ensure people come on board and create something exciting. So suddenly, instead of HR manager, talent magnet captain has a much different impact. And here's where you're starting to make purpose work for you, higher purpose. So to make the experience of working at our company awesome, that's the purpose. Why do I have a talent magnet cabinet? To make the experience of working our company awesome. Instead of saying, my job is to ensure that the compliance with the policies and procedures of HR professionals are blah, 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 blah. You're making this really human and really purposeful. Then you can have in the accountabilities really tactical stuff. So you have higher purpose and really tactical stuff. Okay. Come back out here. And I know you're getting the point. I'm just going to show you deal management. Within deal management, whole bunch of circles within circles. Now, a circle in Holacracy is not interpreted as a department, but I use it as a department in when I'm working with clients and customers. So like we did this entire exercise because this company was finding there were things that kept falling through the cracks and they couldn't figure out what they needed in a role. And what we developed was, you guys need something called deal management. And within deal management, you need to have very specific things that we're going to be asking people to do. For example, you need a role called the catcher. Okay. The catcher is, you got a bunch of clients who are asking for things. What's the purpose of the catcher? To ensure clients and investors feel the love and respect when they need something from us, right? You can feel the humanity. You're actually saying, like, why do you exist? We exist to create an experience that really is wonderful for our clients. What does that actually mean? Oh, it means I'm fielding all inbound requests and inquiries. I'm adding to-do items. I'm responding to all requests. I'm making things happen in a timely way. Now, why do I structure it this way? What is it about this that I like? Well, the reason I like it is, first of all, this is a dynamic piece of software, so you can make changes anytime you need to. And there is a clearinghouse, one place where anybody can go to log in and see their role, how it relates to other roles, and you can move things around. So instead of having a Word document with a really long list that only I'm looking at, you now have this interactive software that is free that you can also pay for. There are some other resources you can get when you pay for it. But the point is this: if my job is to simply add items to to-do lists, and I say, I'd like to hire you to add items to a to-do list, they're going to be like, wow, that sounds tedious and boring and stupid. But if you say, I'm going to hire you to ensure that our clients and investors feel the love and respect they most need when they work with us, they're like, oh, that's why I exist. I have a purpose in this. This role has a purpose, and I'm going to align with that purpose as a person. It just so happens that I'm going to go do some tedious, repetitive things, but it's all in service to this. And then, by the way, I can come in and say, hey, you know what? I think there's some other accountabilities that you did not list that are really important in order to make this purpose happen. So if you just give them a list of here are all the things you need to do, they're just going to do those things. There's no higher, imaginative, more interesting purpose than that. So that is just a quick example. You know, we could go through the whole company, and we're not going to, but you can see how there's all these different elements. Salesforce is the whole category. You've got CRM Ninja, then CRM Tech. These are two different things. One's more philosophical architecture. One's more, I got this person to actually do the coding and the execution. And now we're starting to cook with some gas. Okay. So with that, comments, questions. Have I lost you all? Are you like, this is silly? Why are we doing this?
I would not say this is silly. I've already created my account, but...
Okay, good. Good. And the thing I want to push you on when you're building this is I want you to think hard about creating very compelling purposes, purpose statements that are really interesting. Even the lower down, the further down you get, you want to create something that's human, that feels like you're adding value, that there's some really important purpose. Okay, comments or questions?
So Shane, if we were to do this, and I pulled up the website, there's a lot to unpack here. So I'm assuming, like, I'm thinking about the staff that we have, you know, our chief compliance officer and credit and risk officer. So we would list them, and essentially we already have the roles, or excuse me, the titles. Start with their purpose. You know, what is their true reason they're here? And then, so start with the purpose and then break down all the responsibilities that each one of those people cover.
Yes. And to be clear, I don't know that this is something all of you need to go do. This is a fairly tedious, time-consuming process. You should do it when you know that things are not working right, like something about a given role, or you need to hire somebody. You're not quite sure what it is you're holding them accountable to, or how, who's going to be on first in what way. It's just another tool you can use. And the reason I say that is you could potentially then use roles to populate the RACI chart instead of job descriptions or job titles. What I'm giving you are choices. So I'm not necessarily saying this is the best use of your time. So it, you know, Steve, in your case, it may be you're in a large, complex corporation. It's a really involved process to build this. And I don't know that it's the best use of your time. But for someone like Bridget or Christine, who are having smaller teams and they're trying to organize and think through things more creatively, it's a really helpful way. Or Doug also, I know, and actually a number of you kind of fit in that category. It's also useful in one department. You could try it in just a team of three or four people and go, hey, here's a little training. Here's a document. You can show them my Word document of the, here are the roles of a CLO, right? What are your roles? Well, most people are going to come back and give you like three big roles. They're going to be giant. They're like, my job is finance manager. And you're like, okay, well, is there any function within finance manager that could be automated or delegated? Well, yeah, this aspect. Okay, well, if it can be automated or delegated, that's a new role, right? So that's another way to think about it is, did you just create too big of a basket that you can now no longer delegate or automate certain functions in your business because it's too much? And so this is a way to kind of, again, it's more like what I'm trying to give you guys is solution awareness when you encounter certain kinds of problems. You don't have to use a RACI chart. You don't have to use GlassFrog. You don't have to create roles. But for some of you, it'll be a total game changer. You're going to be like, oh my gosh, all these problems I was having just got cleared up because I did this one exercise. And so I think the first question is, what are the real problems you're facing before you decide to take on any one of these tools? Does that make sense, Steve?
Yeah, I think so. So what?
So I'm going to push back. Sorry, go ahead.
How are those circles actually generated? Is it dependent upon who reports to who or?
Yeah, so the way that I do it, I mean, Holacracy doesn't do it that way. The way a circle functions is they have a higher purpose. What is the higher purpose of a given circle? It's a collection of roles that need to achieve a certain thing. But for me, I translate that into department or area of authority or team or what have you. So for example, when you're looking at, you know, JTP, you've got, the big circle is the company. And then within that company, you have some leadership. Within that leadership, you have deal leaders. Under deal leaders, deal managers report to deal leaders. Firm operations is run by someone different. So these circles in my nomenclature end up being mostly departments. So I do use these circles to determine kind of who is accountable going up the chain. I live inside that circle. And then I can kind of, and so it circles within circles. So that's why you can get down into like finance manager has these three primary roles. And this month they decided to just outsource bookkeeping and then delegate payroll. And now the finance manager is freed up to do more of whatever else the finance manager is supposed to do. But again, it's just another way to think about. So just to be clear, these are kind of two different things I'm looking at. I'm sharing this with you because Christine asked the question about roles versus job descriptions versus job titles. And so it may, again, it may be more than all of you need right now, but I just want you to see more than anything, I want to crack open the way you think about organizational life so that you know there are different ways that it can be conceived of that are quite powerful. And also oddly boosts motivation. People end up going, wow, I feel like I have a cooler sounding role. I'm a CRM ninja. That's a fun role to have versus like CRM management, right? So you can like create, it's part of creating culture too. So there's other elements to this. And that's why I'm saying it, it's not necessary for all of you to do this.
No, I'm loving this just because of the fact that I have not disciplined myself to get down and define the roles within our business. And within the company, and I had one of the guys that just came back from the off season here, and he's like, "So, Doug, what is it that you expect from me this year?" And I said, "You know what? Let me give you a more clear definition on that." So this came at a good time because I need to put that down anyway, and I want to try and use that across more. It might have come at a bad time because we're starting to get busy too, but the tool's there. I can use it whenever I need to.
Yes.
And help define it and then figure out, hey, I just realized now once I did this, I realized that I don't have the people I need. I've got some of them and I need to get more, or I've just got the wrong people, or I need more support on this.
Yes, that's right. So again, a big part of the purpose of doing this exercise of roles versus job descriptions is you're asking the question in part, what do I need to delegate or what can I automate? As the leader or the owner of the business or the team or whatever, you're trying to figure that out. What can I delegate? What can I automate? And that makes you more targeted and effective. And so by creating a smaller aspect of a role within your domain, you might suddenly see, oh, I could hand that over more easily. And when I hand it over, it has its own little purpose. And it's not like I got to increase their pay, because it's just role movement. I'm going to move roles, and it's only going to be a couple hours a week. And so I'm going to move that role over there. And then I see in their circle, there's a role they have that I just observed. And I'm like, oh, that's a separate function. It has its own purpose and it has its own accountabilities. Turns out there's a piece of software that can do that for me, or them can do it for them. So that gets automated. So that's the primary reason for doing this kind of work. And by the way, if you look up like Holacracy and creating roles, there are tons of blog articles on how to design a good role, how to think about roles, how to describe and articulate purpose. So they have a ton of great training that I think is mostly free. If you upgrade to like the premium account, they give you way more resourcing. Just be aware there's a bunch of stuff that they'll teach you that you won't need to do, because you're all running hierarchies, a traditional hierarchy of authority and power over people. They basically got rid of hierarchies. And by the way, Zappos adopted Holacracy in 2007 and ran with it for about 5 years. And then they got rid of all their managers. They lost 20% of their workforce because they didn't want to work like this. And other people just love it and swear by it. And so it's a very innovative way of doing and running a business, but it's very time consuming to learn how to do it. But what it ultimately does is it alleviates the leader of a lot of responsibility. And so you're no longer like a formal leader. You still have accountabilities and authorities and all that stuff, but it's run more like a neighborhood. So like my property, I have full autonomy, sovereignty, and authority over my property. And then you have your property and you have full sovereignty and authority over your property. And we have to figure out how to navigate and negotiate that. So I'm not suggesting you need to take that whole philosophy on, because it is something you have to hire somebody to bring into your business to build. And if that's something that excites you, then look into it. I trust the guy implicitly. I know the guy who built it. Brian is amazing. He wrote a book called Holacracy. It's a great book. So it's amazing. It's not what I teach.
That whole concept just sounds so foreign.
It is foreign.
But Zappos has done well. I can't argue with that.
Yep. And it's coming in full force. Zappos did an evolution. They stayed with most of it. And then they made an adjustment here or there. But there are a ton of other companies that use this. And a lot of European companies use this. Very popular in Europe. And they're growing like crazy. So it's the real thing. Like, and I even considered it for my company. I looked at it very hard and ultimately just decided at this time I didn't need it. But I really liked it. I really believe in it. So you can also read the book, Holacracy. That's a great book. And that's another way to kind of be introduced to the methods. And in that book, there are chapters on creating roles, understanding what a role is, how it's different, all that kind of stuff.
I like your description and your talking about the differences between roles and jobs, because all too often, I have in the past, at least, always thought of them as being very close together, almost the same.
Yeah. And most people use them interchangeably. I just appreciate Holacracy's distinction between those things. That's where I learned it from, and I really liked it. Okay. So that kind of concludes the training portion. It went a little longer than I expected, but Christine had asked a question if that was relevant. So open now for any kind of coaching questions. Anything that's going on in your life doesn't have to be about this training. Could be anything happening in your business you want to talk about.
We're hiring right now, but we're hiring our seasonal workers, so I'm sure I'll have more questions before long. But
yes.
Whole host of problems always tend to come along with them.
How do you find hiring these days? Is hiring seasonal workers challenging or not too bad?
It has been the last few years. We're still so early in the process right now, it'll be tough to see, but we are beginning to now start, and most of the other locations that, because we are a franchise, are doing the same things now, where we're tracking by week applicants, how many people we get a hold of, how many people show up for interviews, how many people show up for the job if they get hired. And so we can start to track that information year to year to see if it's early. So we can see it, get an early picture of whether we're going to make our numbers or not. And if we need to bump up our what we're spending to boost our ads, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to hear how it goes. I mean, this is a massive changes in the world are happening, and not least of which is, you know, population banding is changing. And so you have a combination of what COVID did to us, what the gig economy does to us, and what population is doing to us. So it's some organizations are having deep challenges getting people. Mm-hmm. And to be clear, the stuff that we teach around the first module is one of the most powerful ways to differentiate yourself, which is around higher purpose and vision and values and those kinds of things. And even the way you describe roles so that they have a sense of purpose and meaning that's more interesting than just tedious set of tasks, that those things do make a difference. So if you're competing for their choice between, like, do I want to drive for Uber or do I want to go work in this environment, you need to be positioning and thinking through who are your most competitive industries or organizations, and how do we differentiate ourselves in a way that is really attractive. And one of the things that organizations can do that the gig economy can't do is create a sense of belonging and purpose. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I'm in the gig world, I'm just like, oh, I'm just kind of doing my thing, floating through life. I'm independent. I can do what I want, but I also am kind of adrift. And so organizations have the ability to create like a sun in their solar system. So people start to feel like, oh, I'm like a part of something. I'm not alone. I'm not isolated. And those organizations that only think in terms of like, we have a job, we need you to execute, are failing miserably at competing in this new world. They're just can't keep good talent. Now, I'm really talking about anyone making less than about 60 to 70,000 a year. Anything less than that is where you're finding most of the difficulty finding people. Mm-hmm. Higher skilled jobs still have pretty good talent pool, but it's getting harder, more and more competitive.
And you talked about culture and establishing and maintaining a culture from season to season when you're seasonal and you have so much turnover is really, it has been a huge challenge. We do talk about that a lot.
The way you fix that is rituals, tools, and processes. That's all in module one. Mm-hmm. So what has to happen is culture needs to go from something that is amorphous and based on people to something that is based on agreements and rules of life. So if you look at like a monastic tradition or whatever, they have rules of life. That's how the monks choose which monastic tradition I want to be a part of, is what rules of life do you have together? And so a company needs to have a rule of life that has nothing to do with making money, but rather how we work and live together. Now, you may not live together, but work together. Mm-hmm. And so it's all about behaviors and expectations. And so the way that I design and talk about how to build values, vision, mission, and then how you link those articulations, a very specific kind of articulation, to rituals, tools, and processes, which I go into greater detail in that training. That's how you build culture that transcends people. So when somebody plugs in, there's got to be an onboarding experience that introduces, here are the rituals, tools, and processes that express our vision, mission, and values. And the rituals, tools, and processes are part of work, not beanbag chairs and retreats. It's literally like at the beginning of every meeting, we have a ritual. And that ritual is X. Maybe it's a recognition of some kind. Maybe it's an award. Maybe it's only 5 minutes. It's only 3 minutes. Where every single team meeting, you're going to have a ritual that does a thing. A process is onboarding or performance management or transitioning people out. We do this in a very specific way for everybody so that they have a shared experience. Tools. Tools are, what are those concrete artifacts that remind people of your rule of life together? So that could be posters or foam cubes that you give them or a card that you give them or a video that you have them see. Those are tools, right? So you have rituals, tools, and processes, all of which have to be created so that it supports the organism, not the individuals in it. And then the individuals plug into that. And when they unplug and a new one plugs in, they're plugging into the exact same organizational ethos. So I go deep into that in module one.
I do have to thank you, by the way, because I was watching, I think it was one of the bonus ones on public speaking, because I was participating in a panel for entrepreneurship at a local college here. last week. Awesome. And it was definitely helpful. It worked out well because they've asked me to join their advisory board on their business side of things. So,
I'm so glad to hear that. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. That's great. Good. Thank you for that, Doug. Other questions? Who else has got something that's going on?
Always something going on. We're still trying to figure out where we're going to end up.
Yeah, you're in a big transition.
Yeah, we're in the possible midst of a merger, but the bank can't make up their mind.
Yes. Steve, did you get a chance to do any of the stuff we talked about last week after the call?
This morning, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. So those of you who don't know, Steve is going through some fairly acute grief and because of someone in his life who was lost in a very devastating way. And so I worked with him a little bit after our call to kind of introduce a few things to help him process some of the grief. And the only reason I'm asking on the call with everybody is sometimes, you know, we're all humans and we're all managing different parts of our life. And so sometimes it can be helpful just to hear what are the methods that help us get through the day on the days when we don't want to get through the day, when it's a hard day. And I gave you a few. What did you decide to try?
One, a vacation, although things just keep on happening to the point it's now comical, and I won't go into it here, but anyway, talking to some folks, taking a break, quitting early, quite frankly, on some days at work, and just checking out. And just kind of circling up with friends and family.
Good.
This too shall pass.
Time has a way of doing something.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. I'll keep at it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Checking out early can be important just for almost any kind of a stress. Sometimes you got to just stop.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Okay. Well, if there's nothing else from anybody, we can close up early and we will look forward to seeing you next week. And if you're good with that, we'll connect next week. Thanks, everybody. Good to see you all.
Thanks so much. You too.
You bet. Bye. Yeah.